Hey, this is Richard.
And this is Eric.
And you're listening to the Coral Contrarians Podcast.
Bright and shiny tone that you're using there.
Thank you very much. I've been projecting.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm sensing that was a nice, bright, shiny, but yet some warmth, a beautiful tone. You've been working on your tone, I can tell.
I have. It's going well. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you? You have your voice is sounding mellifluous. These days?
It's a little lower, actually.
Yeah. Sure.
Not COVID low, but low. I'm just assuming that if one has COVID, that their voice
gets
lower.
Drops. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it gets higher. Yeah. Right. You can't smell, hear.
Can't smell, taste. At the very bottom of the list, low.
A lowered tone. Pitch. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's been a wild ride this semester, and I'm sure you can relate, and I'm sure our listeners can relate. But we're having a good week here at UMD. How about you?
Yeah, it's good. I think what we'll do is we'll talk about this today a little bit, about how it's going, but also I guess relate it to the psychology of how it's going. I think that's where we want to go. We don't have a definitive subject to sort of expand upon, except the subject of the moment that we're in. Before we do that, though, I want to celebrate some listeners out there. I don't want to sort of disregard our United States listeners, because you are obviously our largest listenership.
We love you.
Thank you. Thank you, people in the United States. But something curious that has happened recently is there have been a few more listeners from countries that, are not normal listeners to us. Obviously, Canadian listeners, thank you. There has been a healthy number of particularly Scandinavian country listeners, but that might be because of some of my relationships with those countries. But two episodes ago, our second most listened to country was Lithuania. And so what we want to do is to all our Lithuanian listeners.
Yes.
Which, don't get me wrong, wasn't that many, but thank you to those of you. What we want to do is we want to hear from you. That's what the point is. So if you're from Lithuania, email us at thecoralcontrarians@gmail.com. Let us know why you listened to this podcast and what you thought.
I would love to hear from folks in Lithuania. And I think, Eric, not to, dramatize this, but as a percentage of the population of Lithuania, right? That could be our per capita largest audience at this point. We don't know. We'd have to do some math.
The next podcast, which is our last podcast, about imposter syndrome, the second most listened to country is Portugal.
Portugal. Right. I want to know how you're doing in Portugal. I want to hear your perspective. And then, what did you what did you get from this episode, or what inspired you to tune in? I'm fascinated to know.
Thank you. And so if you are, okay, by the way, there are a lot of other countries. So if you're from, if you're from Suriname, Madagascar, or if you're, you know, even if you're listening to this podcast at one of the outposts in Antarctica, mm-hmm. you just happen to have great internet bandwidth there and you can listen to this podcast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Please send us an email. Not just if you're Lithuanian or Portuguese. Can you please email us regardless mm-hmm. of the country you're in? Here's the email. thecoralcontrarians@gmail.com. You can also find us at thecoralcontrarians.com. Mm-hmm. That's another way. Our website is there. It has information, including sort of a different way to access each podcast. Podcast is listed and shown where you can just see the sort of abstract of the episode. And if it interests you, click on it there. And you can listen to it through the website, or it'll at least direct you to something like Apple Podcasts or a different way to listen, however you listen.
Right.
So thank you, Lithuania. Thank you, Portugal. Thank you,
Brazil.
Thank you, Brazil. And thank you to other countries other than the U.S., but also thank you, U.S. Thank you, United States.
Yeah.
And Canada. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you, North America. Okay. So the other day, actually, this is yesterday. Mm-hmm. We started our rehearsal, and again, for us, rehearsals are masked and socially distanced. I'm going to not say socially distanced. I'm going to say physically distanced. Mm. Okay. So we're masked, physically distanced at an appropriate and agreed upon distance for our choral rehearsal. Mm-hmm. But something that happens every year and all the time happened yesterday. So, you know, even though we're in the midst of this nonsense, still normal stuff happens. Like, I'm pretty sure that the barometer changed in the last 2 days. And we had one of those rehearsals where, like, weird, crazy, intonation problems were happening that have never happened before. Mm-hmm. People were tired in their voice, and it was out of the blue. Even in healthful situations, these type of events happen in your choir. And essentially, I said, "Man, I stopped the choir, and I was feeling it too, even mm-hmm. in my own voice, feeling tired and sort of weird." And I said something to the effect of, "Man, I'm feeling really out of sorts today. I feel mm-hmm. not depressed, but down, and sort of like I don't have my voice, and I don't blah blah." So I talked about that, and then we went on a break, and one of the students came up to say, "You know, I was feeling that, and I was feeling bad that I felt that way, and I'm so grateful that you said that you were in the same boat." Mm-hmm. And so essentially what I'm trying to say is that's what I kind of want this podcast to be, is to be a way for you all to feel like you're not experiencing what's happening psychologically on your own. There are other people that are experiencing this, whatever it is. Probably every single thing that you're experiencing, other people are. Even if you go on Facebook and look there, or your social media, and it appears like everybody's doing just fine. Mm-hmm. When the fact of the matter is, we're all subject to the the barometer change of COVID. You know, we're all subject to this. You know, every context is different. We're all subject to the authority of our schools or our cities, governors, all these things. We're subject to those authorities. But at the same time, there are psychological things that I think are happening to all of us that that we can explore today. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be curious, Richard, for you to talk about some of the journey that you've had, especially in the last month and a half, I think, to share with people, because you've had, I think, more of a roller coaster ride than I have. But
yeah, you know, it's all relative, I guess. So, you know, listeners, I think about all the situations that you might find yourself in. You may be in a place where your county or city has determined within the context of your school that there will be no vocal music indoors, you know, at all. Maybe you're trying to rehearse outside and you figured out after a couple of rehearsals that, boy, you know, if there's construction down the road or if a car drives by or if the wind is too high, you're going to have issues. You may be in a situation that started one way and then you found that you've had to completely regroup and retool and do something different. You may be doing what a lot of teachers are doing, which is, you know, you might have a small set of folks that are in your room and another set of folks that are staring at you on a screen, and you're somehow supposed to manage all of those things on your own. And those are those would be a challenge in any circumstance. And, you know, I think you should feel affirmed in the sense that, you know, while often in our, say, in our academic institutions or in churches or in towns or whatever, wherever you find yourself engaged in music, sometimes you find that you're maybe one of a very few number of people, or maybe even the only person in your community who is the choral music person. In a small town, you know, and a lot of us have lived in rural communities or in smaller places, you may be the music person within a 50-mile radius. You might be in a larger city, which would have its own issues right now with dealing with this and changes. But it's comforting maybe to know that if we look outside of those communities, we find other people who may be experiencing similar things and similar challenges. I mean, Eric, you asked about, you know, our own situation here. So, you know, we were a university that thought we were starting in one way, and then, you know, literally the weekend before we were to begin some kind of an on-campus delivery, we got word that that was going to be shut down, and that we would start virtually for a few weeks, and then we would come back and we would try and do some things together. As that has happened, you know, we've had ups and downs with regard to spread and stuff like that in the community. Wisconsin and northern Minnesota right now are experiencing a surge in cases, which, you know, it makes it challenging for people to plan long term for much. And then, you know, I can say that because I have five children, all in different schools, you know, totally different school situations. My wife is an educator in a public school. So as things change in each of those situations, then when I come home and am working through things with my family, you know, I'm troubleshooting things in my situation, but I'm also helping my kids troubleshoot things in their situation. And, you know, I've got some kids who are home like 2 days a week, 3 days a week, other kids who are in school 5 days a week. You know, just things like planning what they're going to do during the day, you know, or planning lunch. Everything that took you know, X amount of time. Well, you take that amount of time and you multiply it by three, and then that's pretty much where you are. So I'll tell you, you know, from a personal standpoint, the last couple of weeks, particularly I think last week, boy, there was stuff going on in the city and with these different schools and things, and you know, it really hit at that moment. It is anxiety inducing and hard to plan, hard to think, I think, when people are stressed out and trying to do things. And you look around and you think, oh my goodness, this, you know, how can you kind of carry on? Then you stop yourself. You feel a little guilty, you know, in a way, because you think, well, it's nice, you know, in a way to be thinking about and planning for, you know, for the jobs that we have, when you know that there are folks who are, you know, suffering greatly. Maybe they're, you know, the entire industry that they work in is not operating. Those of you who are only who are solely focused in, say, community chorus or symphony chorus, you know, I have a, as many of you do, I have a foot in several different camps of making music, and some of those things have shut down completely, while my academic institution is, you know, still a place where I can go work. But, you know, our symphony chorus in town, you know, they're on hiatus for now. Those things that a lot of directors do, you know, get spring, where you go out and conduct some honor choirs, and, you know, you go to the schools, you do tours and things like that. Those things aren't happening. I think of those of you in the tour industry and things like that. That's completely transformed, and is something that is undergoing, you know, kind of existential review, and people are really leaning in and trying to be creative and rethink and do all of that, which is fantastic. But I'll tell you that sometimes you just look around and you need to, you just have to take a second and get off the roller coaster and say, wow, what, you know, how can I reorient myself so that I'm focusing on the things that I really need to focus on, right? And you know, hopefully we have a good list of those things. I think you have to think about relationships and family. You have to think about your own health, your physical and spiritual health, right? Ways to relax and, you know, to rest your mind. All of that. These are hugely important issues. So, you know, we can dig into that a little bit. What you said, Eric, that was interesting to me that I want to kind of pick up on was that image that we see sometimes in social media, which is, you know, people are they're sharing a lot of, or it feels like you see success, you know, like you see the things that are going so well, and you might see a really wonderfully cultivated and curated thing online. But I had this thought, this little sentence came into my head last week, and I wonder what you think about this. I think we have to remind ourselves that content is not necessarily, like, creating content is not necessarily the same thing as creating art. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And if I said that, you know, I wonder where that concept would go as you think about your relationship with this moment that we're in.
I laugh when you say that, partly because some person out there will inevitably think about some recent posts I gave for Drake University that are supremely cultivated and well and very mastered. We have a very talented student on campus that is really good at video and really good at, and so Drake just released something that I do think, I mean, it was meant to be hopeful, but it also, I think, made it look like things were going extremely well here without a hitch. You know, oh, we're just, you know, who cares about what's going on out there? Everything here is just fine. And that's funny that you say that. I mean, content doesn't mean art, although I guess I'm trying to think through some other ways that it appears like other people are doing fine. I think, how many of you saw pictures of people whose rooms they had set up in the way that they're supposed to, and with just empty chairs, okay? But they've, to me, when I look at that, I could see a person that would see a picture of a room of evenly spaced empty chairs where the floor is swept and the chalkboards are super clean and all this stuff. And there's this sort of concept that whoever posted this has everything together, mm-hmm. that they're ready, that they've got a perfect plan in place. And, but then you could be a person that is freaking out because it's exactly like you said. I mean, there's some people that are having to deal with hybrid teaching, and it's not clean at all, in fact. Mm-hmm. Or there's some people that are, as you said, that are required to rehearse a choir outside under bleachers of a football stadium or something, and that's their location, because if it rains, at least you won't get rained on, and you're under bleachers. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's your space to rehearse. And nobody's going to really take a picture with pride of the underside of a bleachers with like Mike and Ike boxes, you know, just littered up.
littered Speak for yourself. Yeah.
And like popcorn. And maybe they will, but or if they do, it will be, look at the tragedy of our current circumstance. And I guess psychologically, it is sometimes, again, it hints to things that we've mentioned over and over and over again on this podcast, which is the presentation of oneself and where we get our identity from, and what can sort of nudge us badly when we lay our eyes on something. Does that move us to think something that is not true or true about ourselves and about other people? And that during this time, where are we getting our hope, and how are we getting our hope, and where are we getting our rational thought about what's going on, or irrational mm-hmm. thought? Because actually, that's one of the things that I've noticed in my own self, just in regard, and not in regards to my family life or anything like that, but just in general, just broad stroke. You mentioned it offhandedly in the middle of what you said, which was things seem to take three times as long. And if I were to pick one of the biggest things I've noticed in myself, is that fact. And that fact has been going on since March, mm-hmm. which is this sort of, why is everything taking so long in my mind to do even simple tasks that I'll either procrastinate more than I ever have, mm-hmm. on something, or it just, the processing of information is not going as quickly as it often does, and I feel lazier, even mm-hmm. though I'm not necessarily, but I feel lost, or like I'm treading water instead of going somewhere in the water. You know how you, mm-hmm. that's what it feels like. I know you could imagine yourself in a pool, and you can propel yourself quicker or slower based on the direction of your arms and the angles at which you're swimming. And mm-hmm. it feels like those angles have changed, yep. where it's not, we're not moving as far, where it's getting closer to treading. Are you feeling that sort of broad, generalized, sort of, in a way, ambiguous sense of taking forever, or take things that are taking way longer?
Oh yeah, 1,000%. I mean, that's and you said something interesting, Eric, which was, you know, like in that moment you feel, you said you specifically kind of felt lazy, you know, when that was happening. And it's funny because we are, I think, some folks, right, are ascribing kind of a guilt or a sense of a lack of control to, you know, to something that they could sort of rectify if they just tried hard enough. And it might be a better position, right, for all of us to look and say, yeah, this, like, when things like this happen, and they don't happen often, but it, you know, I guess they happen. The human reaction, you know, like that's what we are, right? A human response is, for better or worse, to, you know, for us to end up taking more time to process, just because I think actually physically and psychically, mentally, that is a coping mechanism for us. And I think, like, accepting that in a way is powerful, because it gives you permission then to, as we've discussed in this program before, right, to let yourself be in that moment, and for it to be okay for you to be in that moment. I think that one thing that I have felt guilt about, or like a sense of urgency, is something that actually reveals something about our relationship to the art that we have the privilege to create, you know, in most circumstances. We talk, I think, with our students sometimes a lot about process versus product, right? So, like, if we were standing in front of a group of singers in, you know, just about any circumstance, I think often directors would say, look, you know, like, this process of working together and what we're learning here, this is, you know, in so many ways the magic of what it is that we do. And for me, the feeling that I need to be producing, you know, again, I mentioned content versus art. The idea that I need to be producing content, right? Like, there's an experience, like if that concert thing doesn't happen in the way that it traditionally happens, then somehow there's a part of you that's like, oh my goodness, this is, you know, what have I done? I've been so lazy, you know, I've spent all this time and you know, and we don't have the big shebang concert, and so what am I doing? But here we are in this weird magical moment where everything we've been dishing out to choirs for years, which is, it's the process, right? It's the process. It's the thing. It's that journey together. It's all this stuff. Well, now we're in a situation where it could actually be a blessing, or if you let it be a joy, then it could be a joy. And that is, you're living in a moment where it's literally all process, right? And no product. I had this experience. I mean, many of us have, you know, we're doing a number of different things at UMD, and we're able to rehearse together in certain spaces, which is good, in a very, very distanced kind of way. We've done some things outside. The students are experimenting with recording things. You know, everyone's gotten better at creating that kind of stuff if they need to, because I feel like, you know, you got to kind of be ready for whatever. We don't know what's going to happen in a few weeks, a few months, or whatever. But the thing, it's funny, because the things that give people joy, right, are not necessarily the things that we prioritize. And the things that are actually important are not always the things that we think are important. And I think you could create the most beautiful, and we had a whole episode about virtual choirs way before, you know, this was even a thing. And I think it's interesting to consider that episode in light of the changes, you know, that have happened, because I think there's a lot of good stuff there that we're actually watching play out. The idea that at the end of it you get this little box of material, and this is the joy. The joy is that you received this fantastic production, you know, that you contributed to. That may be a joy. It might be wonderful to listen to, but you don't have a memory of that thing. You know what I mean? What do people remember about their year in choir? When we survey our students, what do they always point to? The tour, you know, that one weird time in rehearsal when everyone laughed, that sort of thing. And if we think about things that way, then are we in this moment, even though we don't have the ability to put on, you know, the huge Masterworks concert at the end of the year, or the big Christmas concert where everyone comes and packs the place and all of that. Even without those things, are we finding opportunities to create space for joy and space for community? And if you flip that switch a little bit, suddenly you see all of these opportunities. And I think that's where I was within the last couple of weeks. You know, it was just a matter of kind of changing the script a little bit and saying, yeah, you know, we're missing this, but we still have this. And for our students who are going through anxiety, you know, they're like seeing all of this you know, stuff in the news and everything, and it just feels like it's sort of hitting them. We still have that opportunity to create the one timeless thing in their day. And maybe that's where the art is in this moment. What do you think?
Well, I want to be a pessimistic listener because I might agree with you, but I also might be, well, that seems overly... Oh, look, I am probably changing into being, I wouldn't say an optimist, but the glass is not, it should, our lives should be glasses overflowing, not even half full. But let's say that I'm a person listening to what you just said. And one of the questions that I would say is, what in the world are you talking about? For instance, I'm being jaded. I'm being the pessimistic listener going, yeah,
bring it.
Okay, what opportunities for joy are there when currently one of my biggest issues and my least favorite thing about this entire time is the mask, okay? Mm-hmm. The mask, and by the way, we should mention our sponsor, the Louis the 15th cravat mask again. Mask, we'll highlight that at the end.
Yeah.
But... this is a real issue. This dumb mask thing. Now, when I say dumb, I don't mean not necessary or whatever. I mean it's having a legitimate role. It's playing a legitimate role in the joy, interaction, community, just regular day stuff that leads to what you're talking about. And then the other is, if you're hybrid or if you're this, that, or the other thing, and how do you, quote, create timelessness through the process when that process might not even be happening? The other thing, which is coming from a bit of first world problems for me, because I, again, I'm in a very nice situation here in regards to being able to rehearse. I still sense... the inability to create legitimate community because we must have distance and masks and to establish real, like what is natural when people take masks off that naturally happen. I mean, and what's so funny about this is the mask issue is a physical manifestation of what we fight against on this podcast, which is taking masks off. This is we have to do what are the thing that we fight against in this class or in this class on this podcast on this podcast, which leads to community and real transformation on not only the personal level but the choral level or the ensemble level. And so I guess I'll ask again, what is a thing that comes to mind for you when you're like saying, well, this is an opportunity to, quote, create something that and given the difficult challenges that we're facing?
I totally feel that, and it's real, right? And I'll share, I mean, you know, many folks listening, maybe you're a friend of mine on Facebook. I mean, I had a very emotional experience in at the beginning of my time back with an ensemble, and it was a very humbling and kind of a transformational moment when I actually heard other humans singing. you know, just even in a soft, masked, you know, like weird, nothing, you know, you imagine. But in that moment, you know, I really responded emotionally. And I cried. I mean, just, you know, I was there in a huge hall. Everyone was far away. The masks really, for me, at that moment, I was struck by something really powerful that I saw. And it was a little bit related to what you're saying, Eric, because we do, we've talked about this in the show before. We spend a lot of time talking about reality versus perception. And I think that the idea that ideas of authenticity, I think, and of really understanding and seeing truth, you know, through as opposed to what we filter through and what we think is the truth, and being open to truth, right? Like that's a part of our art and a commonality and something that we think about. When I saw those humans spaced out and their little eyes and the masks, it was a very powerful artistic moment for me. And it hit me in the way that it would hit someone in a museum looking at a painting, because I saw in that moment, here's the tragedy. This is where we all are. This is the human condition. I saw something in that moment that was a bunch of people wearing masks and looking scared and trying to phonate, you know, just like barely just little this baby step. And I thought, here we all are. This is what we all share. Even outside of this moment, this is what our condition is as humans in a weird way. It was like a metaphor that I was watching play out in real life. It was really powerful for me. So to answer your question, you know, about community in this circumstance, one way that we can think about community is in that shared moment, right? So, yeah, it's hard for the conductor to deal with these challenges. It's also hard for the singer, you know, and it's hard for everyone in the room, and it's hard for everyone, because we're all caught in this moment together. Just a recognition of that is powerful. I could talk about ways to, you know, build community into like what kind of icebreakers do you do when everyone's wearing a mask and all of that. You know, those are very surface level kinds of things. I think that the deeper question that everyone has to ask, and then you would answer in your own way, is do you have the ability to see this through the eyes of the people in front of you, and to recognize that they may just be appreciative for a moment of authenticity, right? Or they may just want to feel some kind of a human connection near them in a moment where, like, we're all being asked to be lone operators, lone wolves in this crazy time. You know, what are the ins and outs of operating hybrid and simultaneous, you know, face-to-face instruction and stuff? That's crazy to think about. And why is it crazy? Because it interrupts our ability to authentically relate with the people in front of us. So I think that a creative or a person that is really trying to wrestle with this would be aiming more for authentic interaction and for those chances to be human than they would for content at the end of the semester. Does that make sense? I don't know if that is what you were going for, but that's my solution to it. It's to emphasize process over product.
Something that comes to mind when you're saying that is maybe a troubling situation that might, again, be not at odds at all with what you're saying. I think that is the height of wisdom, what you're saying, in regards to this situation, which is always good. I think I'm really happy with the way that we think in regards to choosing something other than perfection to go towards, especially in this case, it's more obvious. Mm-hmm. But there will be individual challenges with the concept of choosing process. And one of those challenges, I think, is when I've heard from a friend or two that have to do a lot of online, mm-hmm. that there is no way for, this is just a very specific kind of thing, there's no way for a ensemble or a teacher to necessarily require the video of the student to be playing, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in some cases, I think it's possible that you also don't, you somehow can't control even the attendance in some cases of the, mm-hmm. the students.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So I think one of the challenges here is how do you work on process when there's no way to sort of have the heavy-handed tool of attendance, mm-hmm. and or attention. I just feel that's another challenge. And when I was thinking as you were saying that and thinking through, how does one navigate when you're not sure, when the video is off, that the student is looking at the screen or is even in the room?
Mm-hmm.
You could ask a direct question, but if they don't answer, does that necessarily mean there's no evidence either way, one way or the other, whether they're engaged in the material or not,
mm-hmm.
Or with their, in the case of a choir, their music is right in front of them and they're doing the markings as you're rehearsing or, mm-hmm. or all these things. So I'm not, that's a great marimba in the background. I love it.
Yeah. One of the joys of an office next to the percussion.
I love it.
Area is, yep. beautiful marimba solos.
So
nonstop.
It's great. So I guess one word that came to mind, it seems like it's an impossible situation for that teacher or ensemble director. And a word that came to mind,
mm-hmm.
for in all of these cases, it made me think of when in the movie A Knight's Tale, when Chaucer enters the movie, they asked him, Chaucer walks onto the movie completely naked. He has lost all of his clothes for gambling it away, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm trudging. What mm-hmm. what does that mean? To trudge. He keeps talking about to trudge. And I just want to, this is what it means to trudge. To walk or march steadily and usually laboriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know what? The answer to this for me is there is no other choice but to trudge. You are only in control of yourself and how you trudge. I just mm-hmm. don't know if there's any other way around a lot of these issues other than to trudge.
I think you're... No, totally. I think... like, think of these things that are out of our control, right? And we don't know. I mean, if you're teaching, I don't know if you're teaching any remotes. I have a couple that are solely remote, like in a couple of ear training classes. And, you know, you'll see people eating oatmeal or, you know, it's off and back on and all of this. And you don't know what's going on. I think it reveals something that was always there, though, in a weird way, right? Like a stressful situation shows the cracks and things that have always been. And, you know, in a more metaphorical sense, how present is anyone in anything, you know, what keeps people in place to begin with? Like the educator part of me says, well, of course, we start with the locus of motivation, you know, and you're like, you learn to appreciate and to participate in things because of requirements early on, you know, so there's like a functional way around that. But I do think that we have to ask ourselves if we can take a larger lesson from this, which is, you know, in a world where that lack of guarantee is laid bare, right? Where it's so exposed and naked for us when people aren't when people aren't engaged, and they're not required to be engaged, you can't require it, then suddenly the act of trudging, as you say, becomes literally everything. You know, it's the image of that person just carrying on. And there is a quiet strength in that.
I think it's a good and what better thing. I was also thinking long ago in this conversation that what is something that can be shown to our people that are under us or in our care other than faithfulness?
Mm-hmm.
Faithfulness. And what I mean by that is to trudge.
Mm-hmm.
The example in this dictionary that I just read is an example of walking laboriously in the snow. You trudge mm-hmm. in the snow. It's hard to walk in the snow, but when you have somewhere to get to, you must continue to walk more definitively. You can't shuffle. You can't kind of mosey. You have to definitively mm-hmm. take legitimate, hard, forceful steps forward, and you just keep going. I don't know what else we can do other than that. And what that might do is show an example of how to be faithful to your students during this time or your ensembles. I think showing that matters more than showing perfection on social media.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of am thinking that what matters is showing that you are willing and able. Maybe you're not even able, but you still do it. That's the real thing about trudging, is that
mm-hmm.
to trudge is not easy. It's not fun. And maybe it's extremely difficult, but yet you trudge. And that is more important than showing some sort of thing that might not even exist on to other people, to try and preserve some sort of image that, you know what, I have it together. And you know what, on the other hand, maybe you do have it together, and that's awesome. I wish, teach me, you people that have it together. I need to be taught. And the other thing about trudging is it's slow. I think that's another thing that sort of answers it to me. It's a great metaphor, because trudging, you can't run when you trudge. It's just laborious, very marching forward. Mm-hmm. Eventually, the snow will melt, and then you can start to run again, I think. But for now, trudging shows faithfulness to the calling that you are called to do. Or just faithfulness to the job you were hired to do, or faithfulness to your family or your spouse or your, you know, all of these things, to trudge forward. It's a good word for the day.
For sure. You know, it's the opposite of what we expect when we engage, in social media and things like that. People really might do well to remember that so much of the appeal of that is because of the mirror that social media is. You know, it ultimately is a reflection of ourselves and not necessarily a perception of things outside. It seems that way, but that's the illusion. You know, that the reinforcing quality is that you keep seeing yourself in it. And you imagine people's reactions to you specifically. And it's instantaneous, right? All of those things are the opposite of what you just described, which is, service to others through faithfulness. Love for others through faithfulness. And that slow process, right? There, we don't see that process very often reflected in the instant flow of things online. But remembering that some of your best work and some of the most profound moments of your day or your year or your life will be things that no one, really sees, other than those few folks who share in that time with you. That's important, and I think that's where our call to share that, still to find some way to share that with our fellow singers, with the people with whom we work, can give us that purpose, can give us that transcendent goal that is underneath what we do. Because again, weirdly, I think this exposes the lie of so much of what we strive for. And if you take those things away, what you're left with really is trudging. You know, would you keep doing it without those carrots at the end? The thing we're asking our students to do and people that we want to keep engaged, and they don't get that instant feedback, so they're not going to log in. They don't have the threat of attendance, so they're not going to do this. Well, you don't have the promise of the huge end of the year spectacular thing. So what drives you? What motivates you? And what keeps you trudging? It's a great question.
If you are interested in trudging, and trudging in style, one of the things we'd like to recommend for you is the cravat face mask, the Louis XV cravat face mask. And you will be noticed on the street as you trudge with the Louis XV cravat face mask. Note, when you're outside and there is not necessarily a face mandate in your state or country, outside you can wear it as a cravat. The minute you go in, you can pull it right up and have a wonderful... although that being said, I guess we're not supposed to touch our face mask, so I guess that's a problem. But you can still pull it up. And as you enter the store of your choice, the in Lithuania, I don't know what the name... Do you have Aldi in Lithuania? I don't know. Portugal?
Yeah, good question. Yeah. It might be... Well, it's not a far drive to Germany from either of those countries, right? They're kind of near.
I don't know. Do you have Walmart in Brazil? I don't know. You have a McDonald's. Okay. As you walk into the McDonald's, you can pull that cravat. And everybody, what they're going to notice is the frills, on the sides and around the Louis XV face mask. It is only available in Puce, as we noted last time. Unfortunately, it won't go with every ensemble of clothing.
But that that Puce look, and if you're planning an outdoor Monteverdi festival, within your semester, it could be a nice thing, or a concert of Charpentier.
There you go. And I feel quite comfortable with our French pronunciations because nobody from France has ever listened to this podcast. So,
is that true?
I don't know if it is or not.
There's like one French guy. Zut alors, how dare you?
right. Actually, that brings up how wonderful you would be if you took your choir to France and started to use your French accent as you speak English. One of my favorite human phenomena. How do you get to the Champs-Élysées? Or whatever in French.
It helps, they really understand. Yeah, it would put them at ease. They'd feel, like we were there. Yeah.
Right. That's one of my favorite phenomena. And you did it very well. Suit alors, what is wrong with you?
Oui. Merci beaucoup. Oui. Merci beaucoup.
Okay.
On that
Thank
note.
You. on that note, French listeners, sorry, the one listener, yeah, sorry. But
didn't mean to alienate you. But
hey, we've got a lot of Lithuanian listeners, so get in touch with us, please.
The we want to hear from you. I want to know what it's like out there. Yeah,
that's right. The Coral Contrarians at gmail.com.
gmail.com. Connect with us on Facebook at the Coral Contrarians Listener Society. Eric, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Richard. See you, everybody. Hey, keep trudging.